Big welcome to Nia, who's giving a talk about open source flight simulators. Last year, we had a great talk about, what's it called, Microsoft Virtual Flight, or what's the name?
Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020.
Yes, yes. I really enjoyed the talk. So let's have a look what the open source community has put against it. Thank you for doing the talk.
Hey, I'm Nia. I'm in the Flight Geek community since 2017, and in the meantime, I've participated in some of the biggest scenery works so far. We will come to that later. So let's first look at what is Flight Gear even. Flight Gear is an open source flight simulator developed by a community from around the globe. And it's not just a game, it's actually like a simulator. It's used, for example, by simulators certified by the FAA, which is the Federal Aviation Authority in the US. So if you want to do your private pilot license in the US, it is possible that you can use Flight Gear to learn for your license. For example, it's also used in the Bronco Museum in the US as a demonstration of some aircraft. The Red Bull Air Racing team used it to pre-simulate their race courses before they built them with Flight Gear in the past. And Flight Gear has a long-standing history since 1996, so let's talk where we are coming from. We kind of started out in 1996 with the idea, with the current common roots reaching back to 1997, with Dan using OpenGL. We also use back then the NASA LR Sim FDM, which was the default till 2002. The FDM is like the mathematical model that describes how the plane works. So a image on the screen, it doesn't affect the physics. It could be a brick. It would still fly to how the FDM is created. And also in development and like a kind of co-project is JSPSim, which is also in development since 1996. And it's also not just used by Flight Gear. It's, for example, used by universities and stuff to simulate other aerodynamics and so on. On a screen, you see one of the earliest surviving screenshots of Flight Gear together with the logo it had in Windows 95. So the community worked on it for about 10 years till December 2007, where version 1.0 got released. And a few months after that, also a matching version of the first global worldwide scenery. You can see a screenshot here on this slide of this version. And in 2008, the project started to transitioning away from PLIP as the rendering engine to OSG, Open Scene Graph. But we still, till this day, rely on part of PLIP. We will hear about this a bit later. In 2010, version 2.0 was released, with Open Scene Graph being major and some of the new highlights that were possible with this new engine was quite an improvement in clouds and lighting conditions, for example. We had also, by the point, improved custom scenery and many, many new detailed aircraft in this release. 2013, there was a new release of the World Scenery 2.0, which also updated the worldwide scenery. Since 2016, we started using a new versioning scheme. So we start with the year the major release was done. So if you tried out the simulator upstairs and looked at the explanation, you see that the release is still the 2020, because that was when the last major release was, and we're still working on the next one. But I will come to that in a minute. In 2020, one of my biggest projects was finally released. There's a program called OSM2City, which takes data from OpenStreetMap and generates scenery from it. And as you can see in the screenshots from Madrid, most of the buildings and also map trees, for example, get into the flight simulator. So if you contributed to OpenStreetMap, you indirectly also contributed to FlightGear. Thank you very much for that. And in 2021, it was then also automatically downloaded from the simulator. And in 2022, I did a refresh. It took another couple of months. Fun fact, we heard initially about Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 from Microsoft. They used a similar approach to us, taking the OpenStreetMap data. And, well, we had the same bugs, for example. Like, in Melbourne, there was a building with stories wrong tagged. So the height was actually in number of stories or something like this. So we had a 10,000-foot tall building. Yes, we had a bug in both simulators. It got fixed in OpenStreetMap, and then, yeah. Also, if I was a few months faster, or Microsoft would have taken a bit longer with their release, FlightGear would actually have been the first flight simulator with global OpenStreetMap-based scenery. Right, so where are we going? There is a new world scenery in the works, which takes a completely different approach, has some big advantages. It has a level of detail for terrain, which helps with memory consumption. You can see a bit older screenshot up here with still a few glitches, and where we're testing shorelines and stuff. With World Scenery 3, also the night lighting will be improved, as you can see on the screenshot. With again, OpenStreetMap based information on where streetlights are and so on. Another advantage, I mentioned the level of detail, is we can do orthographic scenery, so satellite images, also kind of like the Microsoft Flight Simulator does it, and do that without too much of a RAM and VRAM impact. The only issue we have, Microsoft has their Bing services, they can just take the images. We have to find sources which we can actually redistribute. And with it comes also the problem, those things are huge. So we have to find, and if you have an idea, please let me know, find hosting solutions so we can host the scenery for all the people, because right now, basically there are three scenery mirrors all run by the community. And there is also a new rendering engine in the works, where we move from the OpenGL compatibility profile to the core profile, and one of the obstacles there is that we need to get rid of plib. Plib wasn't used for years for the scenery rendering and stuff, but still got used for menu and so on. And we may also eventually move to Vulkan, but that's still open to if we have enough manpower and those people are motivated and so on. And yeah, also all of us do this just in the free time. I know a lot of people would actually like to work on this, get paid for it, but none of us know how to practically do that. If you know something, please let me know. So now that we know what Flight Gear is, how do you get started with it? On Linux, check your package manager, it should be available. On macOS and Windows, you can go to flightgear.org and download it. There are also app images available if your Linux distribution has just old releases or none at all. Or you can build from source on Linux, like Debian-based Linux, for example, the scripted compilation that's like just running one script and it does almost everything for you. I won't go into that. So I have a short demo video for you demonstrating how you get started. This video does expects you to just have a mouse and keyboard. If you have controls, like for example, in the simulator upstairs, wouldn't need all those things. We're sending music?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes, okay. Right, so so you can follow this along with just keyboard and mouse, but if you're more serious, I would highly recommend you get a joystick or something if you want to try it out. There will still be a simulator upstairs. So
starting Flight Gear for the first time presents us with this welcome screen. This is the main menu. Here we see the currently selected aircraft, location and settings. We could click right on fly, but let's look at some of the settings first. Under aircraft, you see the currently installed aircraft. When you click on browse, you can enable the default hangar and download a wide variety of other aircraft. In the Locations tab, you can search for an airport you want to start on. The weather dialog is fine for now. Let's just jump to settings. Here you want to enable download scenery automatically, so wherever you fly, the needed scenery gets downloaded for you. I leave this off for now because I already have the scenery, as I have a scenery mirror and load the scenery directly from it. I now also set the simulator to always start in full screen. Under add-ons, you can add third-party content you've downloaded yourself. Let's click fly to start the simulator. Note that the default graphics settings are designed to run on low-end hardware. You can play with them in the InSim menu under View Rendering. Let's skip that for now and get right to the flying. Welcome to the simulator. How to start an aircraft manually depends on the aircraft type and can be complex when following the real-world procedures. To make it easy, most aircraft have an auto-start option. Let's use that. We're starting to roll. Let's press Shift and B to set the parking brake to get familiar with the simulator before we take off. To switch to the outside view, press V. You can look around by holding the right mouse button and moving the cursor. Pressing Tab cycles through the mouse modes. When the mouse is in view mode, you can move the view without needing to press a button. The other mode controls the flight controls. Let's look at that. Moving the cursor up and down controls the elevator. Moving the cursor left and right controls the aileron. Use the key 0 and enter to control the rudder. To reset all controls to neutral, press 5. Let's go back to the cockpit and look at a little help. Press H to bring up the heads-up display. It shows you the most important information as well as the position of your flight control inputs. Now we know the basic controls, so let's take this plane flying. Set the mouse mode to flight controls, release the parking brake, and press page up to increase the throttle. The plane has a tendency to move left, so use the right rudder using the enter key to counteract. At the speed of about 60 knots, gently pull the cursor down to take off. Congratulations, you're flying! From here on, the sky is the limit. Have fun!
So, unfortunately, my talk is now on Sunday and you won't have much time, but there at the right spot is still a flight simulator with controls you can try out. I've set it up with the A320. So if you want to try, just go there. There's also instructions how to fly with the A320. So let's see how we get involved, how we can work with flight gear. First of all, if you look at the code, there are several code bases which work together. SimGear is a library where we have some scenery rendering and loading stuff. We have Canvas, which is used for the new menu system for displays in the class cockpit and much more. We have FlightGear, which is the main simulator code. And we have FGData, which has basic assets and definitions, shaders, textures, and so on. And also some things for like hardware inputs. Then there are a few more, which, depending on what you want to do with it, may be helpful. There's FG Add-on, which contains the aircraft, which you've seen you can download. There is FG Meter. You find, for example, the build script I've mentioned earlier for easy building from source, and OpenStreetGraph is the library for you for the graphics stuff. So if we want to interact with this simulator from any external things, we first got to look at how the data is actually structured in the simulator. That's in a property tree, which is a hierarchical structure. And in there you can find a lot of information on the simulator. For example, FDM, the weather, position and velocity views, and you can add, of course, your own properties if you need it for your project. You can inspect the property tree via the internal browser, pressing the keyboard shortcut slash, or via a web interface. So if we want to interact with the simulator, how can we do that? Yes, Telnet is still an option, but I won't talk about that here. We can use user-defined network protocols over TCP, for example, or a serial console. We can use USB or a WebSocket. So depending on what your goal is, what you want to do with the simulator, you may have to have some design decisions here. If you have some external work, like a Raspberry Pi, for example, you work with. Network is an easy thing because it's basically such a protocol. You can define it just, it's comma separate, and you can basically net cut things to a port, and you already are controlling things. A similar thing with the serial console, for example. That's what I tried first with an ESP32. You can just, in the Arduino software stack, write a print, and it reads it from the serial console, and you're already done with your coding. The other thing with USB is, if you use USB HID, so human interface device, the advantage is this device, if you created it that way, will probably also work with other simulators, not just flight gear. Because it's a very common standard for such things. The problem is implementing this. I ran into that myself when I started to working on my own hardware earlier this year. I had initially used the serial port over USB, which worked, but I wanted it to be USB HID compliant, and it took me actually more than a month to figure out all the USB stuff, and, well, I have to admit, I'm also learning Rust on the side with embedded, so, yeah, that plays into that, too. And, yeah. And HTTP and WebSocket allows you to just create a website, for example, where you can interact with the flight simulator. The A320 has that, for example, that you have a web panel for the MCDU. Right, so if you, during any of your tinkering, need any help, there's a forum. There you mostly find people working on aircraft and scenery. The core developers are still on a mailing list. There is also still an IRC round, which is semi-active, and we try to get more people on Matrix. So I mentioned already my own hardware project. That's the schematics and the layout of my first project. I started learning PCB design for this earlier this year, and the idea is now to, like, or was to create an A320 home cockpit, like starting simple, one simple panel of an A320 with all the stuff around it to learn how to do a PCB, how to write firmware, and all this stuff. So, I've got a little demo video for you. So, as you can see, the knob already controls the knob in the simulator, and the brightness control of the thing. It's a bit of an older video. I fixed a few bugs. You've seen the flickering and so on. I'm still working on this. So where I'm at right now, I was here at home, a package with my new ordered PCBs arrived. A first set of 6 PCBs for the pedestal, and, well, that was for, like, the last half a year, like, my personal project I wanted to do on my own. Now, like I said, I have a simulator upstairs, and I got a bit encouraged from some friend, and ideas started growing a bit. So, last few days were really motivating to see people just sitting up there at the simulator for hours on end and play around with it. So, I kind of want to do a event simulator where I can have a simulator which I take to chaos events. Idea is, the pedestal actually fits into the DB definition of Reisegepäck from the dimensions. Only thing is that the thrust lever is sticking out, so if I manage to lower that down into the base and remove the upper panels, I can fit all the other stuff I need down into this, have it in a flight case, and have a portable flight simulator for chaos events and so on. And I'm kind of excited about this, but also I am struggling with certain things, so I'm still looking for help. If you are interested in this idea, please let me know. And yeah, I would love to bring the simulator eventually to a point where I can set at events a full A320 simulator into a corner, not just a side-stick and rudder pedal like I did here at GPN. So finally, I want to talk a few minutes about some other hardware projects from the community. First of all, this is a multi-screen setup from 2008. We didn't have big affordable screens back then. So FlightGear actually has a configuration system for the windowing system, so you can have different views and set them all up individually. And this was actually ran on four GPUs for FireGL 5600. Then another project I want to show you is one that's currently going on by Matthias Sayer. He's working with the Raspberry Pi Pico in this case and 3D printed elements. And that's currently an ongoing project. And there's another thing, like, he got already a request if he could like sell this to people who are not so versed in things. But as it stands right now, like, to sell low volume things, it's a lot of work and effort, and unfortunately not really feasible to do that like on your own if you just do this as a project and say, yeah, I want to give it to some people for like a few bucks. Also a problem I would be happy to get solutions for. And then we have probably my favorite project of the community from 2010 from Jen and Wayne. This is a collimated mirror. What is a collimated mirror? It's the system actually also used in the very expensive, like we're talking million of dollars, full flight simulators where airline pilots learn to work with the aircraft and so on. So why would you want this? The problem is, if we have a projector screen a few meters in front of me, and I'm like looking straight down the runway, but my co-pilot, that's 3 meters, he has to look like to the left to look straight down the runway. One solution would be to have a very far distance to the screen to almost get rid of that, but who has a cinema to build a cockpit in? Yes, collimated mirrors use a use optics and some geometry with mirrors to create this effect of basically the stuff is very far in the distance, but the screen is just like a meter or two in front of you. So how does this work? In the upper left image, you see the structure on top that's called a spider. There are three projectors hanging in there. The screen is currently not mounted, but there's a spherical screen on which the projectors project onto, and that's above the pilots. And then you basically look into the in the upper left image, still wrinkly shape, which then reflects to the screen, and due to the geometry, you always look down the runway no matter how you move left and right. So it's wrinkly in the first image because to get the right shape, you can't just take some wood and carve the shape out and tape some reflective stuff onto it that wouldn't give you a good mirror finish. So what's here used is a vacuum with a control valve to pull this material, which is mylar in this case, into the proper shape you need for this mirror system to work. So I'm already seeing I'm again way too fast. It's happening to me all the time. But I will thank you for listening, and if you want to reach out, you can find me here.
Wow, I'm quite impressed. Thanks for doing that talk. I guess there are questions from the audience. Who wanna start?
Thank you very much. Do you know how well it runs on a Steam Deck?
I don't have any actual data, but simulator upstairs is running on an 8th gen i5 on just on the integrated GPU, so Steam Deck is new, should run fine. You may have to compromise a bit on the graphic settings, but it should run.
Thanks.
Please pass behind you.
Okay. I have a question on how the aerodynamic simulation works and how accurate it is and like how fast and high you can go and still have it be accurate.
Yes, also we have the FDM, the JSP sim, for example, that I've mentioned. So how accurate it is depends on what data is available to you when you create it. For some aircraft, you have to make estimations and stuff, while for other aircraft, there is actually wind data, wind tunnel data published, so you can very accurately get your FDM to match the wind tunnel data, and then it very accurately matches what you have on a real aircraft. Also, we, for example, on the A320 use anecdotal information from pilots. In the A320, the landing lights fold out of the wings and create a bit more drag. So pilots report to have about 200 feet per minute more sink rate at 10,000 feet and 250 knots. And when they extend the landing lights, and we took this anecdotal data and also implemented this in the simulator and tuned this to match the reports of real-life pilots. So yeah, it always depends on what data you have available and how good that data is.
And like, what are the limits of the engine? Like, if someone creates a plane with the right aerodynamics baked in, could they, let's say, do a space flight?
Yes, space flight is actually something which is possible in flight gear. There is a space shuttle.
Nice.
It's actually quite accurate, and from what I've seen, you need to read NASA documentation to like fully fly it. But it doesn't only have one FDM, because space flight is actually quite complicated. Like when you take off, you are pointing straight up, so you have to do some geometry stuff to actually not run into a singularity there. Then there is another flight dynamic stuff for the orbital mechanics and so on. But yes, there are spacecraft in flight gear, and you can work with that. And there's also an active community. Like, as I said, space shuttle is a big thing.
No further questions? Okay.
What's the VATSIM integration capabilities of Lightyear?
For VATSIM, you need an additional client. It's also open source, but because VATSIM, there is some proprietary thing you need to get. So the client itself is open source, but there's some binary blob. It works. I did fly in the past. The model matching is a bit tricky, but that's always the case with VATSIM, because different simulators have different sets of aircraft, and you have to match between them somehow. That's a bit tricky to set up, but all in all, it works fine. And you can really enjoy flying online with that. Also, there's a flight gear only multiplayer, which I don't know, doesn't get as much use as VATSIM and not as professional, but if you just want to fly around VFR with a few people, that's also an option for you.
Okay, no further questions? No, yeah, there is one.
With the collimated mirror setup?
Yes.
Do you know if the eye has to actually adapt to a distance further away, or just the actual distance of the mirror from the eye?
The eye has to adapt to the distance from your eye to the mirror to the screen, because that's where the actual image is and where you have to focus on.
Okay.
Thanks. So it's a bit further behind the mirror, but not 1 kilometer in the distance or something.
Okay. Then one question from me. If you would recommend a setup to begin with, do we have one?
I would just it depends on your budget. If you say, I'm convinced and I want to throw money at it, you can get expensive gear. But if you just want to try it out, a 40 euro joystick from somewhere, or if you get someone on a flea market or whatever, it totally suffices for flying aircraft. If you are interested in flying helicopters, I highly recommend to get rudder pedals too, because else you're out of luck. And also, I wouldn't recommend helicopters with mouse. Because we really need the rudder pedals to control the tail rotor and depends on what you want to invest and how motivated you are, or expect your motivation to be.
Okay. If there are no more questions, thanks for the amazing talk.
Yes.